If you would, turn in your Bibles to Genesis 39. We'll be looking at the story of the life of Joseph and continuing our study of his life and so many practical good lessons that we can gain from this character study. And we talked about providence in our first lesson. And last week we talked about the prejudice and privilege that was involved in this story and what that involved in chapter 37 with his father showing favoritism and then his brother showing hatred. And then tonight we're going to be looking at chapter 39 and talk about priorities and how Joseph displays proper priorities for God. Let me mention something real quickly before we get started, and that is, of course, tonight we'll be moving the chairs and clearing out the auditorium, and the our tour will be closed this week, and so I think we've made that clear with meeting in the back on Wednesday night. And if you can, help us out after church. See Marty or Chris, they kind of have an idea. We're going to put the chairs, and we'll work to get that done after services. And so we appreciate the help and glad to be able to have next Sunday morning. We'll have a new look in the auditorium with new carpet, and so that's a blessing. When you think about Joseph, just for a moment, put yourself in his shoes. He was a young man. We're not exactly for sure his age, but let's just say we know he lived 17 years in chapter 37. So he's somewhere between the age of 17 and we would estimate 25 or 27 years old in that time frame. So we would say college age, late teen, college age young man. He is sold into slavery, taken from his parents. He just lost his mom in the last year, and now he is taken down to a foreign land. They have foreign gods that he's being exposed to. They have a foreign language that he did not speak, that he would have had to learn. And he's also been raised with privilege in a wealthy home, very wealthy home it seems, and the favorite of that home. And now he's being treated as a slave. When we think about going to do mission work, and if you're going to go live in a foreign country, we talk about cultural shock and having that culture shock when you go in there, because you have to learn the language, you have to adapt to all the differences in that culture. When you think about Joseph, he had some tremendous culture shock when he was taken down to Egypt, no doubt. And I think that when we have rapid change, and we experience kind of an unsettling in our life, whether it be a national event, like we experienced, for example, back in 2001 with 9/11, and that just really kind of unsettled in our entire nation, or when you think about other key periods in our nation's history, whether it's even in a local situation or a congregational situation, like when we had the bus wreck in 2008, or when we had other accidents and things go on in our community or other big events happen. Things like even when General Tyre closed and it unsettled so many families. You got to come back to, what are my priorities? What really matters? What matters the most when we have those unsettling things happen? And so chapter 39 involves what I see Joseph displaying three key priorities that I think we should have in our life. The first one is found in verses 1 through 6, and that is that he was honest and hardworking. No matter what situation you find yourself in, we need to be like Joseph and be honest and hardworking. Beginning in verse 1, Joseph had been brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, the captain of the guard, an Egyptian, had brought him from the Israelites who had brought him down there. He had bought him from the Israelites who had brought him down there. The Lord was with Joseph, and he became a successful man, and he was in the house of his Egyptian master. His master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord caused all that he did to succeed in his hands. So Joseph found favor in his sight and attended him, and he made him overseer of his house and put him in charge of all that he had. From the time that he had made him overseer in his house and over all that he had, the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. The blessing of the Lord was on all that he had, in the house and in the field. So he left all that he had in Joseph's charge. Because of him, He had no concern about anything but the food that he ate. Joseph is going to demonstrate himself not only here but later on in prison as someone that is trustworthy, that is someone you can depend upon. As we mentioned in lesson one, one of the remarkable things about Joseph is that he refused to become bitter when he could have easily just wanted to quit. He goes from being a victim to being a victor. He would not allow himself to be overcome with depression and with his current state of life. He made the best of his circumstances. He chose to make the best of his circumstances. He was completely trusted. The Lord was with him in this situation, and he honors the Lord in all that he does. He's going to be someone that it says that the Egyptian master is going to put everything under his charge. And he refers to that later on as well when we're talking about Potiphar's wife, that he had put everything, verse 9 or verse 8, under his charge. It even says that the master wasn't concerned about anything except the food that he ate. In other words, he was his main operator and manager for his entire household. He might have been a fairly wealthy man. Some think that he was a wealthy man. And he had Joseph as a key manager of all of his investments and his property there. He was completely trusted. When you think about this situation and how Joseph excelled in management and in his work, and you think about Potiphar putting trust in him, we need to remind ourselves in this day and age where there is a lack of good workers that Christians should be the best workers. We should be. We should be hardworking. We should be honest. We should be people of integrity. We need to be able to trust our workers to work hard when they're not being watched. And we need to be able to be the kind of person who does what's best for the business, what's best for the person that we're working with, whether we're being watched or not. That's the kind of example that Joseph gives here. He says, everything's put in charge of me, and when the master's not there, he was someone that Joseph could trust. We need to be able to trust, to be trustworthy so that we're honest. When you think about Colossians chapter 3, verse 23, the Bible speaks of this idea. When it says about workers that whatever you do, work heartily as for the Lord and not for men. Joseph was working as a slave, but he was still working the best he could for the Lord. I think it's sad sometimes that we will avoid, because of sometimes the reputation of certain Christians who have worked, we sometimes say, I don't know if I want to get involved with another Christian. Think about that. And sometimes there's wisdom in that, I understand. And sometimes it's good to just have a business relationship and not mix sometimes our relationship in Christ. But you don't be that kind of Christian. I mean, if you're working for another Christian or you're involved in some kind of situation with another Christian, you want to make sure you go, as Jesus says, the extra mile. Because your example and your witness in the community is so very important. And let me say this one on this point as well. That is that honesty should always be our top priority at work. I don't work, obviously, out in the world, but I understand from what many people tell me and what I read and things like that, that oftentimes there is a push for maybe we don't have to be as honest as we need to be if it helps the bottom line or if it solves the situation. That there's often a lot of deception. There's a lot of lies. Sometimes there's even it's understood. We're just going to kind of fudge on this one. We're just going to tell a lie here to solve the problem to the customer. And as a Christian, and I think what we see with Joseph, is over and above a promotion, over and above greed or maybe getting financial gain, is honesty. It may mean defying the boss's desire. It might mean that you tell the boss, I'm sorry, you might want me to lie about this, you might want me to change the numbers on this, you might want me to be deceptive in this, but I am not willing to sell this as a lie, to be deceptive. In our workplace, honesty should always be our top priority. And I think we've seen in our culture over the last 10 or 15 years that with all the corruption that's gone on in the business world, that honesty is not always the top priority of workers. But if you're a Christian, honesty should be the top priority for you at work. The second priority. Now, all these come because the Lord is our priority. That's Joseph's top priority. And so if the Lord's our top priority, then we're going to be honest. We're going to be hardworking. The next one is purity. And, of course, this is the main reason this passage is often used, is found with Potiphar's wife trying to involve herself with Joseph. Beginning in verse 6, the second part of verse 6, now Joseph was handsome in form and appearance. He was a young man that was handsome. And after a time, his master's wife cast her eyes on Joseph and said, "Lie with me." But he refused and said to his master's wife, "Behold, because of my master has no concern about anything in the house. I'm a trustworthy person. But he has put everything that he has in my charge. He is not greater in this house than I am, nor has he kept back anything from me except yourself, because you are his wife." There's a special loyal relationship, obviously, between the husband and the wife. And he says, "I'm not going to violate that trust. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" But she spoke to Joseph day after day, but he would not listen to her, to lie beside her or to be with her. I'm going to spend more time on this point than the others, because I think this is one of the main heart passages of this story, of Joseph's story. But notice that Joseph certainly had reasons to give in to her. We must understand that this was a real temptation for Joseph. It had to have been. He was a young man in his early years. Not that that makes a tremendous difference, because temptation can be just as profound in the latter years with sexual temptation. But what I mean is, he was a typical man in his early 18, 19, 20-year-old time frame. And it was a real temptation. It was also a situation that, when do people get in trouble with sexual sin? It's not usually when they are at home with their spouse, is it? It's usually when they are away, when they're in a private setting, or when they're on a trip, or when they're at work with someone else. It's usually when they're away. If you can be away, Joseph was away. No one would know. You know the sad saying about what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, that they kind of use to promote that idea? Trust me, what happened in Egypt was staying in Egypt for the most part with Joseph. He had a lot of reason to think, "I can do this and no one will ever know. In fact, they all think I'm dead. They have turned their back on me. I'm here." His thought process could have been, "I am entitled to this. I should deserve this. Look at all I've gone through." But Joseph did not give in to those rationalized reasons. Notice also, this was a direct and persistent temptation. Sometimes purity, or impurity, I should say, is a subtle temptation. Sometimes it comes at us subtly. The little ad on the screen while you're reading a sports story that just pops up, or the email you receive, or some just half-hearted flirt by someone at work, that you really, it's a subtle temptation that you really don't think much about, and you're able to dismiss it. Those can be dangerous, but they're a subtle temptation. But this temptation here was a direct assault temptation. And Satan uses both of those. He will often come at us directly. And here he uses Potiphar's wife in a direct temptation. It was direct. She says to him, "Lie with me." You know, she looked at him longingly. She wanted this to happen, and she made no doubt about her intentions. And that had to make it very more tempting in my mind for Joseph, because he's feeling like, or he could have felt like, "I'm not doing anything wrong," because she is certainly wanting this and desiring this. And it was direct. But also notice, and this is one thing that Satan certainly uses in this area. Verse 10, it was day after day. It was day after day. He would not listen to her, though. In fact, if you read this verse carefully, it says that he would not listen to her. And then it's according to how it's translated, but to lie beside her or to be with her. But it's also, there's this idea in this verse that he tries his best, and I think the context brings this out, he tries to stay away from her. He wouldn't listen to her. He didn't want to be around her. He didn't want to be in the same room with her. As he was doing his chores around the house, if she came in, he tried to get out. And ultimately, that's really what happens, isn't it? She comes in and ultimately tries to push herself over on him, and he has to run out. So I don't know how long this cat and mouse game went on, but it went on day after day. He was persistent. Let me just say about that, that Satan, in a general way, not just with sexual temptation, but Satan is persistent. He will not quit. He will use a temptation day after day until he finds you in a weak moment, until he is able to break you down. And so with this type of temptation, certainly, it is something that is persistent. And it is something that does not go away with time. A young man or a young woman will struggle with this and will have to have a plan to deal with it. But also someone who are in their 50s, 60s, and 70s will have to have a plan and make sure they deal with this type of temptation. It is always something that Satan will try to use. Notice his priorities, though. His priorities were twofold. First, his priority was, I've got to think about others. He says, I can't do this because I would be wrong to my master. Now, that's interesting. Because he begins by saying that the first thing is, you're another man's wife. I can't do this because you don't belong to me. You're my master's wife. It makes me think of 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, verse number 3 through 8. Paul says this, for this is the will of God, your sanctification, that you abstain from sexual immorality, that each one of you know how to control his own body in holiness and honor. We've got to control our own body, our own vessel. It's our responsibility. Not in the passion of lust like the Gentiles who do not know God. That no one transgress. Now this is an odd statement in talking about sexual purity for the Bible to make this statement. It does not normally the course the Bible takes. It says because if you're immoral with someone else, you're wronging your brother in this matter. You're wronging your brother in this matter. He says, as I told you before and solemnly warn you, for God has not called us for impurity, but in holiness. Therefore, whoever disregards this, disregards not man, but God, who gives his Holy Spirit to you. I want you to think about when you give in to sexual temptation, who else is being hurt by that? It could be, for example, or it often is the case, that you're hurting very deeply your spouse. You're hurting your children. You may be hurting your parents. You're certainly hurting your church family. You're certainly hurting your kids. And then, we might not think about this, but you're also affecting that other person's spouse. That other person and who they are and their sanctification before God. And you're affecting a whole gamut, a whole surrounding of people. The big lie that Satan tells us when it comes to this type of sin is that it's our private matter, that we can do it and no one else will ever find out. It's just about us. And that is never the case. It always is like a bomb that goes off and hurts everybody else who is surrounded and influenced by those two people. And so, Joseph said, my priority is to think about my master. But then also he thought of God. Go back to Genesis 39, and this is one of the most famous statements in the whole story of Joseph. He says, how can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? He says, my priority is to obey God. There's an old illustration that, not a true story, obviously, but it's an illustration that says that when Potiphar's wife came into this room, that Joseph said this statement. He said, how can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? And the idea is that God is looking, God is watching. And the Egyptian model, they had idols, obviously, and they had all these idols around, and they often would have household idols. And Potiphar's wife takes one of her clothing garments that she is trying to, as she's undressing him, covers up the idol, covers up his face, and says, now God does not see. And Joseph replies, remember this is an illustration, Joseph replies, but it makes a profound point, but my God sees. And that is so true, isn't it? God sees everything. In an idol's mind, you might can cover up the idol, but our God knows all things. And one of the great temptations of this matter, especially today as we deal with all the temptation of our private lives on the computer, or our private lives through texting, our private lives, any of those kind of things, we want to believe the lie that it's our private thing and no one else knows. And what we got to remember is our God sees. We can never hide from God. And Joseph said, even if no one knew, if the master never found out, and if no other servants knew, and if my father and my brothers way back in Canaan never found out, God knows. Our God sees. And so he said, how can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? It reminds us of David in Psalm 51, where David feels guilt over his sin, and he says, against God, against you and you alone have I sinned. He's talking about his guilt before God. So he's talking about our purity. When you think about this purity and what happens here, he fled in the next story, verses 11 and following. So one day when he went into his house to do the work, none of the men of the house was there in the house. She caught him by his garment, saying, lie with me. But he left his garment in her hand and fled and got out of the house. And as soon as she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and had fled out of the house, she called to the men of her household and said to them, see, he has brought among us a Hebrew to laugh at us. He came in to me to lie with me, and I cried out with a loud voice. And as soon as he heard that I lifted up my voice and cried out, he left his garment beside me and fled and got out of the house. Then she laid up his garment by her until his master came home. She told him the same story, saying, the Hebrew servant whom you have brought among us came in to me to laugh at me. But as soon as I lifted up my voice and cried, he left his garment beside me and fled out of the house. He fled. This is the basic temptation, the basic response the Bible gives to sexual temptation. 1 Corinthians 6, 18 and 19. We must flee. We must flee sexual immorality. We must take drastic measures. He stopped being around her, verse 10. And then when she finally tried to push herself on him, he just ran. He got out. There's a quote from Bonhoeffer about temptation that I think is helpful. He says this, the lust thus aroused envelops the mind and the will of man in deepest darkness. The powers of clear discrimination and of decision are taken from us. I believe that's very true. Now that is the case that when we're, and God knows that when we're involving ourselves in sexual temptation areas, it distorts our mind and it causes us not to think properly, and we must realize that we are not strong enough to handle it on our own. The biblical response to that is to not stay in that temptation, but to get out of it. And if you linger in it day after day, it will affect your mind and it will ultimately lead to sin. You see, we've got to flee. It's about improper thinking and getting ourselves into a pure environment. Now, here's four practical points that Charles Swindoll had in his book that I thought were good. And that is, when we think about this, and as we think about fortifying our own marriages, and fortifying, if you're a young person, fortifying your purity, or if you're a single person, fortifying your own purity, here's four practical points. You must not be weakened by your situation. Joseph stayed strong though he could have easily have rationalized such indiscretion. Just because you're single, just because you were done wrong and you've been divorced now, or just because you've had whatever just because is, just because somebody else isn't meeting your needs as they should be meeting your needs, it doesn't justify your poor choice. You must not be weakened by your situation. Joseph is a powerful example of that. Secondly, you must not be deceived by persuasion. She tempted him day by day. Don't give in to flattery and the worldly lines. For example, the worldly lines are things like, who will ever find out? You would, if you did this, you would prove your love to me. Or we're just doing what makes us happy. Or we'll be married soon anyways. Or this will be just one time. Or I can, this will just be one time and I'll never do it again. Or God's grace will simply cover me. Or God understands my needs and my predicament. Here's the thing. Don't be deceived by that persuasion. Don't be deceived by the persuasion that people will often make to try to tempt you into this sin. Number three, you must not be gentle on your emotions. Your inner feelings will plead for satisfaction. You have a physical and emotional desire. You may have to be rude with your emotions. Joseph refused. He said, I'm getting out. He was very plain. We must often not be easy on ourselves. We've got to say, look, I know I could be emotional here. I've got to be strong, and I've got to make sure I draw some clear lines. By the way, a general rule there is if your spouse would not be comfortable with it, then you shouldn't be comfortable with it. Number four, you must not be confused with the immediate results. You must not be confused with the immediate results. Now, when you think about Joseph had bad immediate results. We haven't got there yet, but I think you know the story. We're going to verses 19 through 23. He is accused of rape. He's accused of trying to do that to her. The master comes and will send him to prison. He is demoted significantly and is going to spend years in prison because of this false accusation. There are times, and I don't know exactly how this all works, but I'm told that at times, even in reading and studying for this lesson, that people have often even been threatened, and I think this certainly can be the case maybe with women, where if they don't, they can lose their job, or they may feel like their job is at stake, or they will not get a promotion, or they won't get a raise, or there could be consequences that come negatively. And let me say this. Sometimes when you stand up and do what's right, like Joseph did, there may be negative consequences, especially for our young people who may be ridiculed or made fun of. And so they are being traditionalist and old-fashioned, and they just don't understand today. Do not be confused by the immediate results. You do what's right, even if it means immediately you may have some ramifications that are negative in the world's view from that situation. It may mean a breakup of a relationship for a high school kid, and that can be very difficult. You know, as adults, we can say, oh, that's just a high school breakup. But when you're in high school going through a breakup, that's hard. But don't be confused by the immediate results if it's what's right and if you're standing up for what's right. Our priority should be purity, should be purity. And then in verses 19 through 23, our last point, let's read that. As soon as his master heard the words that his wife spoke to him, this is the way your servant treated me, his anger was kindled. Some commentators think that maybe he was didn't really fully believe her, but he was just upset about the situation and the compromising issue now that he had to deal with. Because they said, some think that if he really believed her, he would have probably put him to death, which he would have had the right to do. And some think that maybe because of the Egyptian culture of that day and the masters maybe having more than one wife and maybe having numerous women that he was with, that she was actually trying, that there was a lot of problems there. And so that, we don't know, but whatever reason, he was forced to have to deal with Joseph. And the way he deals with Joseph is he sends him to prison. So the Joseph's master took him and put him into the prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined, and he was there in prison. But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him steadfast love and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison put Joseph in charge of all the prisoners who were in the prison. Whatever was done there, he was the one who did it. Same thing, honesty, trusting, hard work. The keeper of the prison paid no attention to anything that was in Joseph's charge because the Lord was with him. Whatever he did, the Lord made it succeed. Notice a few things about lowly service. First of all, the Lord made whatever he did succeed. Joseph has now been demoted to a pitiful prison cell. But God showed him his steadfast love and gave him favor. He rises to prominence in the prison and becomes the leader of the prison. Whatever he did, it succeeded. He did lowly service. He was in charge and gained once again the favor of the prison keeper. Think about that line. Whatever he did, it succeeded. Now, what was he doing? He's doing low work, isn't he? He went from being the highest son of Jacob, and now he got demoted to a slave. That's not exactly good work, right? That's not exactly high-profile work. He rose to prominence in that, and now he's got demoted even lower. He's in the prison, taking care of managing the prison. That's low work. Think about what Jesus says in Luke chapter 16, verse 10. I think there's a... Y'all know what happens to Joseph at the end. He becomes the second in charge of Egypt. But I want you to think about this. And I think all of us need to consider this. Verse 10. One who is faithful in a very little is also faithful in much. One who is dishonest in a very little is also dishonest in much. And then chapter 19, verse 17. Chapter 19, verse 17. The Bible says, he said to him, "Well done, good servant, because you have been faithful in a very little, you shall have authority over 10 cities." The rule God makes is this: whatever you have to do, you be faithful over it. You may not have a very big job, and you may be like Joseph. You've been demoted and demoted down to what you feel like is a low job. But whatever you have to do, do it faithfully, honestly, and well. This is lowly service. We need to see the significance in the small and lowly deeds. Daily tasks are a ministry of God. They are. You know, it is significant what a mom does every day, isn't it? But many of those tasks are lowly tasks. They're things that you never get done with. Feeding people, doing laundry, cleaning the house, things like that. They're lowly tasks. But they're the work of God. They're a necessary part of God's work and are an important part of God's work. And you think about work in the church, whether it's small things like we have going on even tonight in moving chairs or doing all the small things that have to be done around our facility, all the small things that have to be done in the church in general, organization-wise and teaching-wise and financial-wise, all the numerous things that have to be done. And many of those things you might think are small things, but they're the ministry of God, aren't they? And if you do those small things well, it says something. I think we should ask ourselves, what's your priority for others in how you treat a confused teenage kid who is trying to work that cash register at Wendy's, and you're in a hurry to get back to work, or you're in a hurry to get your food to get home after a long day. You know the look. She's the girl at McDonald's, Wendy's, whatever, or guy, and you can tell that it's like she is struggling, and you're thinking, there's not a chance my order is going to come out right, and you're thinking it's probably going to be another 10, 15 minutes later than what I want. Now, how do we treat her? It's a small thing. Are we kind to them? I'm not saying don't try to get what you ordered. You can be straight with them. You know, try to do what you want. But are you kind? Are you compassionate for their situation? How do you respond when a small task needs doing that really someone, and I'm going to use the quotes here, lower than you should volunteer to do at work or at home? Do you jump up and go do it? How do you respond to lowly tasks? We need to see the significance in the small and lowly deeds. Joseph, he's a great example of someone who, no matter what he was given, he was faithful in that task. He was faithful in that task and done the best with it. Our priorities for God and others is seen in how we handle the low and the humble task and the positions that God has put us in. When you think about your priorities, are you honest and hardworking? Are you dedicated to purity? And are you sincere about doing lowly service and still prioritizing God? This evening, if you need to put Christ on in baptism, if you need to rededicate your life, please come as together we stand and as we sing.